Coming up, what an excellent day for the history of the devil. Part 26. And welcome to another episode of The Exorcist Minute, a show where we normally examine, extrapolate, and excavate The Exorcist, minute by terrifying minute. My name is Lester Ryan Clark.
And I'm Keenan Diaz.
And we are still your holy guides on this journey through the history of the devil. And today we are covering the last half of John Milton's Paradise Regained. Last time, you'll remember, Satan was thunderstruck for the second time in his existence after his fears were confirmed that Jesus is the Son of God. After a very brief council with the other demons, Satan disguises himself as an old man and meets Jesus in the desert where he says, "Hey, you and me could work together. We could make some dough." "But first, I'm hungry. How about rustling up something to eat? It's the yeast you could do." But Jesus doesn't rise to the occasion. So Satan rolls out of there, admitting to himself that this idea was pretty half-baked. Another very brief council in which Belial suggests they bring in the hot chicks. Mm-hmm. And that gives Satan an idea. The idea not to listen to Belial at all. Instead, he founds Hell's first community theater group, and they head off back to the desert for dinner and a show. Mm-hmm. But Jesus is not impressed by the demon's second-rate rendition of Food, Glorious Food. So they depart, leaving Satan and Jesus alone in the desert. And Satan says, "Money, open parentheses, that's what I want," close parentheses. To which Jesus replies, "Can't buy me love."
I just didn't realize it was possible to make that many bread puns. Did you do all of them? I
baked them myself.
There's no mention of buns, but I guess we're not that kind of show.
I mean, you know.
The hot chicks, buns, No. I was like, oh, that'd be a little icky. So I'm glad you didn't do it.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, glad we didn't even mention buns. And that is where we left off, folks. So let's get right back into it. Book 3 opens with Satan at a loss for words. Quote, "So spake the Son of God, and Satan stood a while as mute, confounded what to say, what to reply, confuted and convinced of his weak arguing and fallacious drift." So not just confounded, but confuted and convinced of his own weak argument, folks. This prideful angel, the proudest spirit, sees clearly that he is wrong. Milton says after a moment that Satan collects himself, and then he starts again. He says, "I can see now that you're wise and a gifted speaker. What's more, your words aren't empty. I can see your heart. You really do walk the walk. You practice what you preach. If kings and nations were to ask your advice, your counsel would be more valuable than Urim or Thummim." He's referencing these sacred objects which the high priests of ancient Israel would use for decision-making. Some say they're gemstones inscribed with names or symbols for casting lots. They're commonly believed to have been gems on the high priest's breastplate. Essentially, Satan is saying your wisdom and guidance would be more valuable than that of the wisest priests. Speaking of kings, he says, you should be a great king. These are qualities of a true king. If you had an army, your leadership would make them unstoppable.
I saw that Urim and Thummim are light and truth.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, who cares if you like that, Lester? That's what they are. Like the writers of the Torah. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
ancient
writer of the Torah. Yeah. Let's keep it.
Yeah. Lester likes it. Oh. Jeez. Shut up, Lester. Jeez. So Satan is comparing Jesus to a king. He says, mm-hmm. you have all the kingly qualities, right? And he says, right. So why are you hiding all of these virtues? Like, why am I the only one seeing them out here in this desert? Why are you depriving the world and depriving yourself of the glory, which even the highest spirits desire, right? He's talking about angels. He's talking about himself, probably.
They're the highest.
The highest, right? So he says, even the highest of the highest spirits who have no care for wealth or earthly pleasures, even those still secretly covet the glory that you can so easily have if you wanted. So why? You're old enough in human years, more than old enough. Young Alexander conquered Asia and Persia by this time. Scipio, Pompey. But it's not too late for you. Look at Caesar. He was 55 at the height of his power. You still have time.
Sorry, it's Pompey, though.
It's Pompey?
Yeah, Pompey is the city.
Ah, oh, it just sounds so...
It sounds dumb, I know.
It sounds so Pompey.
Yeah, so Caesar was 55. Jesus is 33.
Yeah.
Oh, is he 33 at this point? I guess so.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the Gospels about him having a birthday party, I suppose.
Right, yeah. I mean, this is like his... Like his final act, right? Yeah. So he's got to be 32.
In December.
Sure, Keenan.
Sure. Sure. It is. No, it's not. It's not actually.
It's supposed to be in the spring or something.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it might be around this time.
Yeah.
But when I turned 33, that was a pretty big year for me because I've constantly been, you know, whenever I was a kid, I would compare my life. I'd say like it's my, I lived an 11th of my life.
Right.
You know, I'm 7 now or whatever. And I'd get really bummed out. Yeah. So when I was 33, I was like, well, Jesus changed the world by the time he was my age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, Keenan, not all of us can bear the sins of of the world on our shoulders.
Oh, but we could try, can't we?
Yeah, that's a tough act to follow. At 33 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know. Dante was 45.
Oh, 35.
Fuck. That's right.
We seem to find role models who are older than us. And it gets harder and harder every year, doesn't it?
Oh, wait a minute, Keenan. Listen to Satan. He says Caesar was 55. So we can still, you know, conquer like a big chunk of the world.
All right.
With our podcasting.
Right. Very good.
Yeah.
That's going to be our way in.
Yeah, right. First they'll let us into their ear holes. And then they'll let us into the rest of their holes.
Great.
Yeah.
That's a plan.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I like this response by Satan because, like, we can read it two ways, right? You can see it, you can see all of this stuff as more trickery, right? And I honestly think that's what Milton was going for. We're going to see a little bit later. I think that's exactly it. But I also liked playing with it and reading it as Satan genuinely recognizing Jesus's gifts and being really and truly puzzled as to why Jesus doesn't take advantage of them, right? Something that Satan would absolutely do, like if he was in Jesus's position, right? Mm-hmm. And that interpretation goes beautifully with the whole trope of, you know, evil cannot comprehend good, right? Mm-hmm. Which is one of my favorite tropes. And it also makes Satan human, which, you know, I thought that was the whole goal. Or maybe not, right? I guess it's justify the ways of God to men. Okay, fine. But... I think modern readers would have more fun and find richer characters the second way, my way.
This is the kind of soft power that I like to use as well. Like in my Machiavellian ways in my normal life, right? It's like, you know, I don't try to trick people in Satan's sort of way, except like this part, like where he's like, you're so good. You're just so good. Like, you're denying your goodness to other people. That's very much like a Keenan Machiavelli on your shoulder saying like, why? Just do this.
Yeah.
You deserve it, man.
You would be great.
You'd be great, right?
Yeah. But yeah, in any case, Jesus answers. He says, you've not convinced me to seek wealth. That was last episode, folks.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to convince me to seek glory. What is glory but a, quote, blaze of flame? It is fleeting and people are fickle and great does not necessarily mean good. People praise heroes and villains equally for their quote unquote great deeds. To be criticized by them would actually be greater praise and is the destiny of anyone who desires to do good. Job received true praise from God and the angels even while everyone was criticizing him on earth. God even said to you, Satan, he said, hast thou seen my servant Job? He was famous in heaven even before you made your little bet, even though he was a nobody on earth.
Hmm.
And then he says, earthly glory is false glory. Those who oppress, conquer, and slave other countries, those who win battles and assault cities are no more than glorified robbers and killers. though some like Nero and Caligula claimed to be gods, and Romulus called himself the son of Mars, but eventually death always reveals them to be men, like everybody else. Mm. Not even like everybody else, worse than that, because of all the murder they did.
That'll get you.
Yeah, right? Real glory, so Jesus says, real glory is won through patience, endurance, and wisdom. Again, he says, look at Job, who is now more famous than any Roman leader. Look at Socrates, a teacher who suffered and died for the truth, seeking glory for glory's sake, and not for the good it does, renders the seeker worthless. I seek not to glorify myself, but to glorify God.
Mm. Yeah. We are talking in one of my classes, Cinematic Structure, right now, uh-huh. about heroes and villains and what makes a hero. Yeah. And I think what makes a villain is a little bit easier. But like, what is it about a character that makes them heroic, right? And like Socrates and Plato rather had, and Aristotle had all these ideas about what makes a hero. But we align on things like sacrifice, I suppose. Doing things for other people,
right? Selflessness.
And one of my students brought up something that she had heard, and I guess in another class, which is like, a hero will sacrifice the thing they love most for the whole world, and a villain would sacrifice the whole world for the thing they love most.
I love that.
Yeah, isn't that great?
that is perfect.
You know, you learn from these kids.
Wait, can we, you know, is this like kind of trademark that?
I don't know where she found it from, so right. I'm quoting her.
Just give her, just go back to that class. It was like, you are such a good student. You are so good. And just, you know, just give her some extra credit, and then we just, you know, pocket that, and we'll...
Yeah, so I'm quoting her, Izzy Lau. I don't know where Izzy heard it from. So there you go.
Well, Izzy Lau, that was amazing. And yes, you deserve all the credit for that. But please let us use that.
That's the Lester and Keaton mode. Yeah. We're talking about things like in The Exorcist, right? Uh-huh. This trifold idea of like hero, main character, and protagonist, and how those things are sometimes masks worn by certain characters.
Yeah.
We're watching Fargo, so like in that one, there's three main characters. Which one is a hero? Which one's a protagonist? Which one's a main character? They kind of swap these roles. Yeah. And we've also been talking about like heroes and villains as being, opposite sides of the same coin.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they often are yin to their yang, anima to their animus, right? Yeah. Like the villain is perfectly matched. Like they are catalyst and enzyme, and they only affect each other properly.
Yeah. We're going to actually get into that a little bit further down the page in this episode. I'm excited to talk about that because I see that in this Jesus and this Satan.
Right.
Yeah. So Jesus has some real disdain for glory here, right? And he says he seeks not to glorify himself, but to glorify God. Mm-hmm. And here we get a real flash of anger from Satan. He says, think not so slight of glory, therein least resembling thy great Father. He seeks glory, and for his glory all things made, all things orders and governs, nor content in heaven, by all his angels glorified, requires glory from men, from all men, good or bad, wise or unwise, no difference, no exception. Above all sacrifice or hallowed gift, glory he requires, and glory he receives, promiscuous from all nations, Jew or Greek or barbarous, nor exception hath declared. From us, his foes pronounced, glory he exacts. So I love this. This response is so telling. Firstly, he says, therein least resembling thy great Father. I love it. It's like, that's the one difference between you and your dad, is that you don't want glory.
Right. And Jesus doesn't really know his Father, I guess, in this version where he's sort of, you know, become less the Son who was this disembodied part of the Father. Right. So now the devil's like talking smack about his Father.
Right.
And he's like, oh, God, should I believe this devil? I guess, you know, he doesn't do that. He just doesn't believe the devil.
Right. Right.
I would be like, you don't dare talk about my Father. And the devil would be like, you don't even know your Father. I know your Father better than you.
You're not joking, though.
I'm not joking.
Yeah, yeah. I know, that sounds like a joke, but no, that's exactly what this is.
No, really? Yeah, yeah. The devil knows the Father more than this version of Jesus does.
And what I like is we can look at this as Satan being duplicitous, but whether that's true or not, right? Jesus hit a nerve here.
Right.
And Satan gets genuinely angry, right? Probably didn't mean to show this much of his hand. He's like, oh, don't be so quick to bash glory. Dad seeks glory, you know, from all of us. If everything you said is true, Dad's not innocent in this. And don't you dare say he is.
Right. Right?
Yeah. So, this right here is that sibling rivalry that, Rogers was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is the older brother who's already moved out. and he's you know, talking to the younger brother who still idolizes dad, right? And he's like, I know about the world and I know about dad more than you do. And he's not one of the good guys.
Right.
Yeah. And here also Jesus gets mad. I love this addition to the story that both of them are getting emotional about this, right?
Right.
So Jesus says he didn't create everything for glory. He created it for us, for all of us, out of the goodness of his heart. Shouldn't we at least give him thanks? But no, instead of thanks, he gets abuse and betrayal, right? And Jesus is talking about Adam and Eve here, but I like to imagine when he says the word betrayal, Satan kind of looks away, right?
But again, depending on what Jesus means by all of this, like, you know, God created everything out of the goodness of his heart, but he creates the earth, so the heaven and the earth in Genesis, he creates that specifically because of Satan's betrayal.
According to Milton in Paradise
According
Lost.
To Milton, yes, exactly, yes. According to Milton, right, yeah. All of the creation of earth, the separation from heaven and earth, the creation of earth and hell is right. Specifically because of Satan's act. So again, if Jesus says that he did this for the goodness of his heart, you know, this Satan doesn't quite say this, but it's not really out of the goodness. Satan knows better. It's actually because of out of spite, I guess.
I mean,
well, from Satan's point of view, I mean,
from Satan's point of view, right?
Satan's like, no. I was actually there when he created the heaven and the earth. Speaking of Job, right?
Right.
I was actually there, and I know why he did it. He did it because of me, not because of God just woke up one day and was like, let's make earth and hell.
I don't even know if he's thinking about that. I think his argument is that he created all of this. He's creating things to worship him.
Right.
I think that's Satan's argument, and Jesus is saying no. He created them out of love. But then both of them, like if you look at Milton, like he created them because of, to fill that third of heaven that was lost because of Satan and his buddies.
Yeah, exactly. So like we remember that because we just read Paradise Lost and we just did a podcast series about it. Milton Satan doesn't seem to remember that. He doesn't bring it up.
Yeah. But he's really good at, you know, fudging the numbers in his own head.
It was almost half. It wasn't a third by the time it was almost half of them.
And they left because they wanted to.
Heaven really went downhill culturally, so he had to get out of there.
This is too many Starbuckses. And,
Like I say that about Vegas since the pandemic, because stores close at 10 or 12. They used to be 24 hours. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's last call at bars now, and I'm like, this city's dying.
They have ATMs up in heaven, but like the ATMs close when the banks close. It's like, why?
What? Why?
The ATMs, right?
Yeah.
Angel teller machines.
Yeah, and he can't ask the angel teller machine. He has to ask the angel pen machine who does speak, but the angel teller machine doesn't speak.
No. Wow. You took my bad joke. And you add an extra layer of hilarity to it. So Jesus is talking about betrayal is all the thanks that God gets for creating all of this, right?
Right.
And again, I love, like, if this was a movie, we would be closing up on Satan as he says the word betrayal, just to see his eyes flick away, you know? Because the next stanza has Satan speechless again, right? Mm-hmm. And we know by now that when Satan is unable to speak, it's a big deal. Because he's Mr. Monologue. He's all about the sound of his own voice, right?
Right.
Just ask, you know, any member of his council, right? But he's been rendered speechless a couple of times when he first saw Adam and Eve, when he first sees Jesus, and now here when he's actually talking to him. But finally, after a while, he says, and I imagine this is, you know, kind of a sulky tone. He says, say whatever you want about glory. Seek it or don't seek it. I don't care. But you were born to rule a kingdom. You are the son of David on your mother's side. But Herod is sitting on that throne now, and he's not going to give up what he and the Romans stole by force. Now Judea and all the promised land belongs to Caesar. You think you're going to take it back by retreating into the desert? Fine, you don't care about glory. Glory's not going to motivate you. But what about anger? You want to talk abuse? You see how they abuse your people? You see how they desecrate God's holy city, his temple? Shouldn't you be angry? This is your father's house. You have a duty to free your people from slavery and oppression. You are destined to reign. So reign. What's keeping you? And Jesus says, destiny is destiny. It'll happen when it happens. That's for God to decide. Yes, I talk about abuse. If I'm going to end abuse, I first must prove myself against that abuse. I will suffer hardships, trials, injury, and insults, and I will rise above it and be a better, more compassionate ruler for it. But what do you care? Don't you know that my rise will be your fall? And folks, listen to this answer. Firstly, he mirrors Jesus' comment on destiny. He's like, that'll happen when that happens. I have no hope of being forgiven, so what do I have to lose? No hope means no fear. And if there is some worse punishment waiting for me, I'd rather get it over with. If there is a deeper hell, that's where I belong anyway, right? Talk about destiny. That's my destiny, so that's my goal. I have sinned, and I will be punished whether you succeed or not. But then, Satan says, quote, though to that gentle brow willingly I could fly, and hope thy reign from that placid aspect and meek regard, rather than aggravate my evil state, would stand between me and thy father's ire, whose ire I dread more than the fire of hell. And none of this feels like a lie, folks.
Right.
Since this book started, it feels like Satan has been telling maybe not the truth, but his truth, as far as he understands it. He is opening up to Jesus in a way that he has not done with any other character. He's not saying this stuff to Belial or Moloch, right? Maybe Beelzebub in our version.
No, that's the problem. He's not saying this to Beelzebub in our version. It's his companion deer.
Right. Okay, so he's not saying this to nobody.
Nobody.
Right? Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is, right, the father of lies cannot help but tell the truth to Jesus. And again, it's not Jesus working a spell, right? It's just Satan can't help but feel that goodness coming off of him, like that compassion, that love that is so compelling. He's literally compelled by the power of Christ.
Yeah, he'll do that to you.
Yeah, right? He's seeing in Jesus that part of God that he couldn't see or wouldn't see back up in heaven. And holy shit, guys, like that last bit that I just read, he ends by saying, though to that gentle brow willingly I could fly. Basically, you're someone I could follow. You're like dad, but you're also not. I would willingly follow you, and maybe, rather than punish me and make me more resentful, you would change me. You would make me better.
But it's not just like, so maybe again, thinking about the opposite, like Satan in this version is charismatic, right? He gives speeches, he holds councils, and then they agree to him, and they don't even figure out that, like, oh, we have a representative democracy, but it's all a sham. Like, we just love, whenever he gives a little speech, we love it.
Yeah.
And it's not speeches he's saying that that Jesus is winning him over with. It's not his charisma. It's his, he says placid aspect, right? His meek in regards, so his placidness and his meekness, like it's the opposite of charisma. Like that's not how I would say charisma. Just something in him that is peaceful.
Yeah.
That Satan is like, oh, I can't, my charisma is a +9 and your charisma is a +1, but your meekness is a +11 or whatever. It's overcoming me.
Yeah. And I feel like he can't even put his finger on it. What is it about Jesus, right? Like, he says the word meekness here, but I think he's trying to, he has to put a name to it. He has to put, it's like you're this, or you're, you know what your thing is, you're this. And he can't do that with him.
Your Christian nature.
Yeah. And Jesus is like, my what?
You know, Christian. Yeah, like shirt off of your own back. Turn the other cheek, etc. And then in the Forrest Gump version, he's like, turn the other cheek, you say? And then we see him go on a talk show and say, turn the other cheek.
Right.
He goes on Dick Cavett.
Yeah.
Oh, that's on the Beatles. That's John Lennon in Forrest Gump.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Right. Forrest Gump says, they're like, what's it like in Vietnam? He's like, well, yeah, they ain't got no possessions and no religion. He goes, no religion, too. Yeah. He thinks, and you see him thinking about it, right? Imagine. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, folks, the Beatles were ever present. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But yeah, okay. So Satan finishes up, right? He's like, so what are you waiting for? Seems like we both want the same thing. It's win-win for everybody, right? For the whole world. So let's go. Maybe you're waiting because you're thinking of the danger, of the risks. That makes sense, right? For even though you possess all the best traits found in man, your life has been quiet so far, right? Mostly at home. You haven't even seen all of Galilee, and you visit Jerusalem once a year. You haven't seen the world. How are you going to rule it? There's kingdoms and empires and experience out there. Without experience, even the wisest will be too careful and too cautious. I will show you the kingdoms of the earth, and you will learn the arts of kingship and also learn the secrets of their kings and how best to oppose them. Yeah. And with that, he takes Jesus up to a high mountain. And we know the story. This is the second temptation, right? All the kingdoms of the world, which I always wondered about. Like, it seems like it would be the last one, right? That's how it is in Matthew, actually. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, most retellings go with the order in Luke, which is bread, kingdoms, and then jumping from the temple. How do we feel about that story-wise, Keenan? Like, which order has more of an impact, right? I go back and forth. Like, what about you? Like, how would you order these?
Is this like fuck, marry, kill with these temptations? What are we ranking?
if you were doing a dramatic retelling of this.
Oh, because you're presuming, right, the escalation. So the last one would
yes.
be...
I always thought kingdoms of the world would be the last one.
Instead of like ruling from the temple.
Or no, jumping from the temple.
What's in it for him to jump from the temple?
That's what I'm saying.
Wait. Maybe I don't remember this well enough. So he jumps off the temple, and what's so cool about that?
Well, the jumps off that. Okay, really, really quick, right? The bread. You know,
the bread. I understand.
Okay. We're good with the bread, folks.
There is no Everybody. Bread. Then there's bread. I get that.
No. There is no bread. There could be bread. But there still is no bread.
Okay. All right.
That's that temptation, right?
Right.
Then, according to Luke, right? The second one is like, I'll give you all these kingdoms, fall down and worship me, right?
Yeah.
And then the last one is takes him onto the roof of the temple, and he says, mm-hmm. jump down from here,
yeah.
and you know, to prove that you're the son of God, and because the angels will catch you. And everyone will see that you're the son of God.
Oh, see, that is what I think it is. Okay. So yeah, you jump from it, but it's like the power of what? Of like of his religious aspects. He's yeah. God. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay, cool. All right.
Like, show me that you're God, right? Show everybody that you're God.
Yeah. Okay, great. And he does that through jumping. I'm caught up now. I understand this. Totally understand this now.
Yeah.
No, I would think proving God is the biggest escalation that you are God. But I guess why do you disagree with that? Because he already knows he's the son of God?
Well, no. I mean, when I was younger, I guess I didn't think of... I didn't think that anybody was first. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I didn't realize that it was the temple, like uh-huh. in the middle of the city where everyone could see.
Uh-huh. Right.
So I just thought that it was like a tall building and it was like at night and he was going to be basically doing this in front of nobody.
Okay.
And so to me, that was why? Like, what's the purpose of this? You know? Uh-huh. And his answer is like, you shouldn't tempt God. You shouldn't put God to the test. Right.
Right.
And I was like, well, yeah, like, you know, I'm not going to go and jump off a building, you know. But like, I always saw the kingdoms of the world as the bigger temptation. Right. Like, and then the condition of worshiping Satan as the ultimate betrayal. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, all the adaptations I have seen, right, movies, TV, animation, dramatic retellings, and now this poem, they go with Luke's order, which mm-hmm. is bread, kingdoms, and temple. Mm-hmm. But this poem does something that the other retellings don't. It expands upon the words of the scripture. And so I actually like this order in Milton's version. But you like it even outside of Milton's version.
I like that. As the escalating nature of these temptations for Jesus, uh-huh. for me personally, it uh-huh. would be kingdoms, because that sounds like a lot of work to me,
yeah.
to rule every kingdom on earth once I get it. Uh-huh. The temple, because that's pretty cool, I guess. You get, you know, matrixy powers, but then everybody knows and they're going to bother you all the time. And uh-huh. so the last would be bread for me. It's like you have the power to make bread whenever you want, and that's pretty cool.
Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
That's for me personally, not for Jesus.
That would
I understand it for Jesus. Yeah.
Temptation. Yeah.
Yeah, I would turn down the first two because it's not like I make bread and then everyone else in the world is like, oh, look, it's the guy who makes bread out of his hands. Let's bother him all the time to make bread. I just get to do it by myself.
Interesting. Okay. Well, now, I never thought about this, but I don't even know if this is blasphemous or not. Like, if the devil came to me, right? And let's say, you know, I'm not the son of God, right? I'm mm-hmm. not Jesus. I'm just a guy with powers, right? And he's like, hey, you know, you wanna show off your powers here? Yeah, okay. So I would go first with temple. that would be the starter, uh-huh. and he would say, it's like, yeah, jump off this temple because you know you can fly, and I'd be like, no,
I already know, right?
Yeah, yeah. I already know.
Dark. No one's around.
Yeah, and then also, what if I can't in this one instance? You know?
I see. Right.
Yeah. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to risk my life. And then yeah, the second one would be kingdoms. Mm-hmm. And it was like, yeah, I'll give you all these kingdoms. And it was like, now that you mention it, Kenan, that would be a lot of work. I want to be the power behind the throne. I want to, yeah, you yeah. know, have a cushy little throne, you know.
Completely.
You know, at the base of the throne, you know? Yeah. Right. Pulling all the strings and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, then he would take me out to the desert and he'd be like, mm-hmm. all right, okay, so what's your favorite cheat meal? Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, oh man, you know, I really like those El Monterrey microwavable chimichangas.
Oh, they're frozen chimichangas.
Yeah. Oh, God. And Satan be like, all right, well, you know, we got a bunch of rocks here. But what if they weren't rocks?
Right.
What if they were, stay with me, mm-hmm. delicious, just microwaved El Monterrey chimichangas.
And microwaved well enough that there's no ice in the middle or anything.
Right. Yeah. No.
And it's not too hot. It's going to burn the roof of your mouth.
Yeah. This is Satan talking. And they're microwaved so perfectly. The outside is crispy. And you got just a little bit of that bean and meat just kind of leaking out. And it gets a little crusty, you know. And the grease is kind of pooling around the plate there. Right. And then I'm like, with La Victoria medium salsa? And Satan's like, mild, medium, and hot, baby.
So this is canned salsa?
No, it comes in a jug. Or a jar.
So that's, you would trade away, that's the last temptation of blessing.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. What am I trading? No, I'm not trading anything away. I wasn't the son of God at first. This is all, I have these powers.
Right.
This is just Satan saying, oh, prove to me, show me. Sure, like I'm a little peckish too. I could go for some El Monterrey chimichangas.
Right. Say less, fam. Here you go.
Yeah. Some right.
El Monterrey microwavable chimichangas.
Yeah. Yeah.
La Victoria salsa.
Yeah. Rustle up a TV here. We'll watch some Welcome Back, Cotter. And I'm like, man, this guy gets a bad rap.
Cotter?
No, Satan.
Oh, it's like Cotter's been gone. Where's Cotter been? Well, you got to welcome him back. Something happened.
Yeah,
that's the
yeah.
only answer for that. You can see how badly this school, this inner city school in the 70s needs teachers.
Uh-huh,
and yeah. they sent him away.
Yeah.
And now we're welcoming him back? I don't think so.
Yeah.
There's more to this story.
I think the understanding is that he fell from grace and now he's back. He had a better job uptown.
That's right.
But he got fired.
Mm-hmm,
right? That's why Satan likes this. Right? That's what they're all going to be singing when he loses this one. And
yeah.
He's heading back, right? It's welcome back. But anyway. But yeah, okay. So but like I was saying, right? The other retellings are so close to mm-hmm. the actual text. In some
right.
cases, it's like word for word. But you can't do that with the Bible. The Bible has a very distinct style, as if it's summarizing something bigger, right? Mm. It's always like, and Jesus went into the desert, and the devil came to him and said this thing, and then Jesus said this thing, and then the devil took him to this other place, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like I'm making fun of it, but like that's very close to it. It's very
mm-hmm.
short,
right.
And if you play it exactly like Scripture and put it into the story that you're making, it feels like they're following a script,
mm-hmm.
right? Or it's like a dance. Like Satan shows up and he's like, okay, you know why I'm here. I got to ask you these three things. Please phrase your answer in the form of a verse of scripture. Please
mm-hmm.
answer clearly, right? Like it's protocol, right? And if you do it that way without any other context, then yes, I think, you know, kingdoms of the world would be the one to end on.
Mm-hmm.
But Milton has decided that what's in the Bible is a summarization of a much bigger conversation between these two. And it's a real conversation. It's not like a call and response. And in Milton's story, these last two temptations almost seem spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
Like Satan hadn't thought of them beforehand.
Right.
Right. He's reacting to what Jesus is saying. And so here he's like, you know what? You're right. Earthly glory is just false glory. Look,
mm-hmm.
look at all these kingdoms. Look at how corrupt and mismanaged they are. You could do a much better job. You've
mm-hmm.
convinced me. But also, look at their military strength. You couldn't possibly beat them alone. But what if you could win them over without a fight? I can do that. These are mine. I can give them to you and you will fix them. You talk about destiny and prophecy. Those are meaningless without armies, without physical, tangible help. So let me help you. And Jesus basically says, stratagems and weapons of war are useless to me. They are a sign of human weakness, not strength. And as for prophecy, my time has not yet come. But when it does, I will not need these things. And again, why are you so concerned? What do you care about Israel or the throne of David? Where was this concern when you convinced him to take that census and cause a three-day plague? So here, Jesus is referencing a story where King David decided to take a census of Israel and Judah, which God sees as pride or like trusting in military strength rather than God. And so he gives David a choice of punishments. They are 3 years of famine, 3 months of fleeing from his enemies, or 3 days of plague. Now, we play the temptation game. So an angel comes down to you from God and says, you did something bad. You messed up. I'm going to give you three choices. 3 years of famine. 3 months of fleeing from your enemies, or 3 days of plague.
This is an easy one for me.
Yeah.
3 months of fleeing my enemies.
Yes, is what I would choose as
Okay, good. How come?
Because never says you're going to get caught.
Right. So I guess you could get caught.
Yeah.
But that's up to you, I guess. Exactly. You have some agency here.
Yeah, right. So you just run for 3 months and that's it. Right?
Or they catch you and they stab you in the butt. But
yeah, sure. Yeah. Right. But yeah, there's a chance you're getting out of this.
Yes,
right?
I think so. And it's up to you.
Because after that 3 month mark, right? Like they could be like right on top of you, but then, you know, it's like the buzzer goes off and they're like, oh man. And they just walk away with their pitchforks and their clubs and
yeah, you know, I would hope to time it perfectly like that.
Yeah, right. Well, it's God, so angel's gonna come down in a referee, you know, shirt,
right.
With a whistle, right?
I just wouldn't want to be like two countries away at the 3 months mark, and the buzzer goes off, and I'm like, I was winning so much. That's just boring.
Yeah. They didn't even, you know, I hid for 3 months,
right.
Basically.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, so we would both choose 3 months of fleeing
that
from enemies.
That is the only
right?
sensible answer, I think.
Yeah, yeah, right? But for David, right, 3 years of famine is too much for him, right? But because of his pride, so is 3 months of fleeing from his enemies.
Oh, David.
So he chooses 3 days of plague, and 70,000 people die.
Oh, wait, so it's the whole kingdom fleeing from the enemies.
Yeah.
So some of them are going to die no matter what, I guess.
Well, yeah. But 70,000 of them?
We can get less than 70,000 dying from fleeing, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, I think so.
Yeah.
It's famous last words, I guess, but.
Come on, guys, we can run away. It's not like 70,000 of us are going to die. Yeah. But yeah, so Jesus is saying that Satan was the one who gave him the idea of the census and then also persuaded him to choose the plague.
Right.
Right, for pride. And at first I was like, okay, this must be another one of Milton's retcons. In 2 Samuel, there's no mention of the devil. But the same story is told in 1 Chronicles, and it states, quote, Satan rose up against Israel and incited David to take a census of Israel. Now, regular listeners know, as we have covered the history of the devil, a lot of mentions of, quote, Satan, that's lowercase Satan, in the Old Testament aren't supposed to be read as proper names. I can very easily see this as reading, quote, an enemy rose up against Israel and incited David to take a census. Right? Like an enemy nation.
An adversary.
An adversary. Yeah. Yeah, right? That's probably what it was, right? Some enemy nation. But as we know, it's these types of mistranslations that have helped in filling out capital S Satan's backstory. And here Milton is doubling down. He's like, no, that was the correct translation. It was Papa Satan that did that. And so, yeah, so Jesus calls him out on that here. He's like, where was your concern for Israel then, right? And you're giving me the same temptation now. You think God's strength won't be enough, which, you know, fair. Satan did get clobbered by God's army, so we should know about this.
No, he willingly left. He didn't get clobbered.
That's right, yes. He willingly left, and he took almost half.
Over half.
over half of heaven's sons, right? Yeah. But yeah, this is where book three ends. Again, we end in a weird place, right? Right in the middle of a conversation. And I guess it's less weird if both the middle books do it.
Okay.
At least it's consistent. but I can't help but feel like Milton, you had like built-in chapter markers here with the three temptations, right? This could have been three books. But again, you know, he's expanding on the story. And the temptations are more like points in the argument that they reached organically. Like this is still the second temptation. Satan's not done.
He's
going to try another version of the kingdoms of the world temptation, which I guess he also did with the bread and then the feast. So yeah, so he's expanding on all of the temptations here. But Keenan, what do we think of this book?
Well, the second half of this book is a lot of the old Milton for me, of like references upon references, and on this Dartmouth site I'm reading it on, hyperlink upon hyperlink. So thank you very much for clarifying anything that's going on in the second half of this book for me.
I
had trouble with it. But again, there's a lot of this stuff of Milton seeming to try to equate Jesus's problems with like geopolitical problems.
Yeah,
which again is not my understanding of the biblical Jesus is concerned, right. But that does seem very much like a Miltonian idea of,
yeah,
like what about the government of Palestine, or what about that? Yeah, yeah, I don't think, and like him saying like, what about your people? And for Jesus, I mean, yes, in the Bible, he's there to minister to the Jews, but he doesn't talk like that. He talks about it being like anybody who knows God through him is welcome, not just like the people who happen to live in a particular geographical or racial ethnic group.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But Milton's an Englishman, so that's how he sees the world.
You could almost say, Keenan, that Milton is making God in his own image.
I would say so, yes.
Yeah, which is, I guess, you know, that's something all of us are guilty of. But,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my version of Jesus is, I see, like, I keep saying, oh, the biblical Jesus, but that's filtered through my appreciation for some of the gospels that preach social justice and, like, economic justice more than others, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's me.
Yeah. My version of Jesus looks like Ted Neely.
Who's Ted Neely?
He was in JC Superstar.
Oh, I haven't seen it. But all right, yeah, oh yeah, he looks a lot like Jesus. This Ted Neely guy.
And I like him because he's 5'6", which is close to my height.
Are you really short? You're not that short.
I'm 5'8".
Oh, that's a regular person's height.
No, thank you.
Being 5'8". No. You're 40 and 5'8".
Yeah.
And that's enough.
That's enough. I am enough.
No, yeah, I'm but speaking this... of like Barbie, like I am Kenuff.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, this Ted Neely looks like stereotypical Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
The way that Margot Robbie is stereotypical Barbie, yeah.
Yeah, the blonde hair, blue eyes.
Oh, yeah. Exactly, yeah, central casting.
Oh, yeah, right. And yes, I am aware, you know, Jesus was not, you know, white with blonde hair and blue eyes.
Mm-hmm. He probably wasn't taller than you.
No. Yeah, it was probably regular. Everybody was shorter back then.
Yeah, Goliath was like 5'11 or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
They were like, look at this guy.
This giant. Yeah.
Giant.
Yeah. But yeah, folks, so without further ado, let's get into the final book. This is the final book of Paradise Regained, but also the final book for Milton's Satan.
Mm-hmm.
All the way from book one of Paradise Lost to here. Milton didn't write any more about Satan after this. This is it. So let's take a look. So no argument at the top and no Milton once again. We just go right back into the conversation, starting with Satan's reaction to what Jesus had said. Satan is once again speechless, and Milton says all his clever deceptions had been laid bare. Mm-hmm. But Milton compares Satan to one who thinks himself the smartest person in the room, but when he's proven wrong, he doubles down to try to save face and embarrasses himself even further. He also compares him to a swarm of flies at a wine press who constantly get shooed away and just keep coming back. I guess that was like a problem back then, right?
That must have been common enough for Milton's time that people would know what that was.
You're making wine and the flies are just like buzzing around and it's like, get out of here, right? You probably had like, you know, a lot of fly in your wine.
That's probably true. I don't know. That is something I've recently discovered is like trying to shoo my cats away when I'm eating frosted mini wheats, which they apparently really like. And
what?
Yeah, I've been eating them my whole life, or their whole lives, I mean.
Well, yeah.
And they've just discovered that they like them. I don't know what happened. So it's really hard for me to shoo them away when I'm eating frosted mini wheats.
Yeah. So here, Satan is like a cat on frosted mini wheats.
Like that old proverbial cat to right. frosted mini wheats. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So Satan brings Jesus to the western side of that high mountain. And he apparently, okay, so this is, I forgot to mention, this is a non-existent mountain. This is a mountain from which you can see like all the kingdoms of the world.
Well, how the hell are we supposed to know it's a non-existent mountain?
Because you can, from the top, you can see every single kingdom that ever existed.
All right. Yeah. Fine, Milton, fine.
Yeah, take me to that mountain, Keith. Anyway, yeah. So he takes him to the western side of this mountain, and he points to a city, and he says, "The city which thou seest, no other deem than great and glorious Rome, queen of the earth, so far renowned, and with the spoils enriched of nations." And he does some magic here where they can see every aspect of Rome. So they can see, you know, the small details close up and also the interiors of the buildings. And Satan praises the architecture and the number of great people flocking to Rome from all over the world. And he tells Jesus that the emperor is old and has no son, and he's barely even in Rome anymore. He's retired to an island somewhere and left Rome in the care of his favorite. That's Lucius Aelius, if anybody's wondering. And it's Caesar Tiberius, Tiberius Caesar. Yeah. Both men, so Satan says, both men are hated by all of Rome, and the city is falling into corruption and wickedness. How easy it would be for Jesus to come in and fix things. And Satan says, with my help, you can do that. Forget Israel. You got to aim high. And Rome is the highest.
So if you were able to understand any of these things in Milton's time that you were reading, you probably knew that the emperor that he's talking about is Tiberius.
Yeah.
And you probably knew that the emperor after Tiberius is Caligula.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but thanks to the Dartmouth site I'm reading this on, I had that answer here.
Yeah.
So he's like, Jesus, you could have saved Rome from Caligula, I guess is what's being told here.
Yeah. Well, the I think this favorite of Tiberius's is another guy. This is what did I just say? Lucius Aelius.
Yeah.
Definitely shortly after comes Caligula.
Yeah, Caligula. So,
Caligula. So, oh, geez. Yeah.
Bad news. And Jesus didn't step in this fictional version and save them from Caligula and Tiberius Caesar, right?
Yeah, right. So Jesus replies. He says, "You say Rome is great, but you don't show me the people starving in the streets. You say it's corrupt, and you talk about me dethroning a monster, but what about dethroning the devil that made him a monster?"
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and I just imagine hands on hips, just looking at Satan, right? Satan looks away again. He does that thing where he, like, you know how, like, when a kid's in trouble, it's I have never done this in my life, but I see, like, cartoons of kids doing this all the time when they're in trouble. It's hard to even describe. They grasp their upper arm with their other hand and they kind of like look away into their shoulder. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, sure. And then the arm that's grasped with the hand just kind of lies there limply like a cat.
Yeah, it's like straight down, right? Yeah. Listeners, like, I'm not crazy. Like, this is it's a classic like animation pose of somebody in trouble, like a small kid. Yeah.
Yeah, that's been my whole life.
Yeah, right.
that's my pose. Yeah. That stereotypical Keenan is in that pose.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So this is Jesus, hands on hips, looking at Satan, right? And Satan's got that pose. He's clutching his arm, right?
Yeah. And one of his legs, the his toes are pointed, and he's sort of like moving his leg back and forth, like,
yes.
So
Jesus says, I haven't come to punish a corrupt empire, right? It's certainly punishing itself. My kingdom will be like a tree shading all the earth, or like a rock upon which all these kingdoms will be dashed. But how or when that happens is not for you to know. And so, yeah, so still a little bit sulky, Satan says, I see how little you appreciate my offer to help. Nothing pleases you except arguing. But to prove how valuable my gifts are, I'm going to put a price on them. You can only have them if you fall down and worship me. Pretty easy to do, just lip service, and then it's all yours. I don't know. I was expecting the worship me thing to be a little bit more subtle. Like, this, Keenan, this is the worst haggling ever.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
He's like, I can give all these to you. Right. And Jesus says, no. Right. And Satan's like, but what if, to prove how valuable it is,
right,
it comes with a price.
Right. Exactly. Jesus says, no, this is gross. Like, these empires are not worth my time.
Yeah.
He already answered him, which should be the end of this argument.
He already said no, yeah.
Right. He doesn't want these.
Yeah. But I wonder if Milton is doing something here like, are we supposed to see this as, oh, he has nothing else. He's just throwing stuff out here, right? Like, he's desperate.
Yeah, I don't know. We've seen Satan desperate before, and it comes across in other ways, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the actual scripture works better here in this instance, because we don't hear Jesus's response until the temptation is complete, right?
Uh-huh.
He shows him all the kingdoms and says, fall down and worship me, right? And then Jesus says no. But here, the temptation is a conversation over two books, and it plays out like, I'll give you all these kingdoms. No. I'll give you the biggest kingdom. No. Okay. You drive a hard bargain. How about you also worship me? What?
Right.
Milton, that's not haggling.
Well, maybe it does propel Jesus to be even stronger in his no here, this last no, which I think is pretty strong. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'm saying, like, you know, have Satan open with the worship me line.
Right.
After, you know, showing Jesus a couple kingdoms, and then keep piling on kingdoms until you got all the kingdoms of the world, right? Like, is that enough to worship me now, right? Like, that's what I would do, right? That's how you can have both. You can have this conversation where Jesus keeps rejecting him, and it makes more sense that Satan is going bigger and bigger with each offer, right?
Right.
Do that next time, Milton.
Yeah. But Jesus is like, you know, it's like, here's a kingdom. And Jesus is like, this kingdom's broken. And then Satan is like, well, I have two kingdoms. Like, well, they're all broken. Like, three kingdoms.
At some point, 70 broken kingdoms has got to be better than one fixed kingdom. Nope, that's not how that works. But now, so obviously, Jesus says no.
Right.
He's like, I never liked your talk, but now you've given yourself away. Right. Mm-hmm. These kingdoms weren't given to you. You stole them. And now you damn yourself more with this blasphemy. You are damned by your own hand, and everything you say or do damns you even further.
Mm-hmm.
And I like him specifying that he is damning himself.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, he is digging his own hole, right? And he's been doing that, like, ever since the beginning, ever since book one of Paradise Lost, right?
But Jesus says, get thee behind me, which he says in the Bible, but this sounds a lot more like cattier, right? He's like, no. You're damning yourself, and get thee behind me, by the way. Like quoting himself to Satan. Like,
and if I may quote me.
Right. Get thee behind me, Satan. Z formation with the clicks. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The way you say he's got that one finger up, and he's kind of I don't know. How do I? It's not a visual medium. What am I? You know what I'm saying, right?
I know what you're saying.
He's like, oh, no, you didn't.
Uh-uh.
Right? Yeah. But I like Satan's reply here.
Okay.
He says, be not so sore offended, son of God. Whenever a villain calls you by your correct title, there is always some disdain behind it. Right? I love that, right? Mm-hmm. It happens enough to where it feels like a trope, doesn't it? Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Palpatine going like, so be it, Jedi. Right?
Uh-huh.
Like, he's calling him the correct thing, but he's somehow turning it into an insult.
Does that apply when your mother calls you by your full name? Did your mother ever say that? Lester Ryan Michael Clark.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That never happened in my house because we have long Hawaiian middle names, so
she never
said that.
But yeah, so Satan calls Jesus son of God, but it sounds very, very disdainful.
Mm-hmm.
And then he continues. He says, quote, though sons of God, both angels are and men, implying, hey, we're all sons of God. What makes you so special, right? Bene Elohim is how they referred to angels.
Mm-hmm.
And that literally means the sons of God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Satan continues. It's my business. He says, it's my business to figure out who you are. That concerns me specifically. And look, you passed all the tests, right? They didn't hurt you. In fact, you come out smelling like roses. You have gained honor and esteem, and I look like a fool. So fine, let's forget the kingdoms of the world, right? They're fleeting. They're temporary. Win them if you can, or don't. I don't care. I won't advise you. You don't seem to care about them anyway. You're addicted to meditation and debate. We can see that from your childhood, when you slipped away from your mother and went to the temple where they found you talking with the rabbis. but they weren't teaching you, you were teaching them. And now you've grown in years as well as wisdom. Be famous for your wisdom. Expand. Let your mind spread all over the world. There's more out there than just the laws of Moses. How are you going to persuade the Gentiles? You need to think like them. You need to learn from them. If you don't like Rome, look over here. This is Greece, birthplace of great thinkers, artists, and geniuses. I can show you the homes and the schools of the ancient wise men, Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, Homer. You can study all these in person or even from the comfort of your own home, if you like. Now, Rogers of Yale Courses says this is Milton having Satan tempt Jesus with something that he, Milton, would dearly love. Mm-hmm. That final line about being able to study at home suggests Satan is offering something like a library. Mm-hmm. And Milton had a pretty big library, but was unable to enjoy it in the same way by this time in his life being completely blind. And here he is having Satan be like, we can go to Greece. We can visit Plato's house. This is something that Milton had never been able to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the temptation, even more than bread. That one would get me, this super library. I mean, where can I go and get all the knowledge that's ever existed at home? Mm. That sounds pretty neat.
Yeah, right?
And there'll be cats there, like videos of cats.
And there will be cats. Yeah.
And I could use it to anonymously complain about businesses that I've been to. Great.
Right. And I tried to read it this way, but I don't think Milton is hinting it. But for some reason, I thought maybe Satan was also saying, like, you could study with Socrates.
Okay. Well, my phone can't do that, so.
Yeah.
Well, we can make Socrates into a language learning model.
Yeah.
And we could predict what he would say to me. And he would tell me that I'm pretty and smart.
Yeah. I could do like a little text-to-speech, and I could have him say that his favorite meat is hot dogs. And he would say that hot dogs are a sandwich.
They are. Socrates says so. I'm not alone in that. Socrates says
everybody,
they
look,
are.
Hot dogs are a sandwich. Socrates. Yeah. Jesus answers. He says, if I'm the Son of God, I either already know all of this or I know that it's useless to me. Mm. Plato resorted to making stuff up, and Pyrrho of Elis says that all of it's made up and can't discern between fact or fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So what can they teach without misleading? They don't even know themselves, much less God. They talk a lot about the soul, but they get it wrong. They fancy themselves gods of wisdom and give God the names fortune and fate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure about Jesus's answer here.
Mm.
It sounds like Milton, again, after being tempted by a library of infinite knowledge, he has Jesus talk about how the word of God is all you need.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's how I'm reading it. And I have never liked that argument. It has created so many problems in our history. And maybe he doesn't mean it this way, but like I can't help thinking of people who like reject or condemn science in favor of religion, or like people who won't recognize the humanity of like another group of people, mm-hmm. right? I'm talking about like race, but I'm also talking about gender, sex, sexual orientation, or other religions, mm-hmm. cultures, like any type of grouping, right? They won't bother to educate themselves and learn about those groups simply because they don't worship the same God or think God said to hate them in the Bible,
right,
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, the whole like, you know, God over knowledge thing bugs me.
Mm-hmm,
But, and I don't know, again, I'm not smart enough. I don't have enough knowledge to know that is what Milton is saying here, but it feels like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, and this is a long monologue. Milton has his Jesus bash all the great thinkers,
yeah.
right? Milton's idols immediately after having Satan praise them. If I had to interpret this in a way that would be more palatable to me, I would say that Jesus is saying true wisdom is more than just being well-read. Knowledge and wisdom are two different things. Knowledge is supposed to augment wisdom, not replace it, right? That's my 2024 interpretation, which is probably incorrect.
But. Yeah, but we know Milton is a learned person, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Is that more evidence that he agrees with Satan, or do we read past this and say, like, well, you had to say this?
Yeah.
Because this is what you had to say until the Enlightenment, right? So they're still like 100-120 years away from being able to say that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think he was, he was teasing himself here in these pages. It's like all the knowledge of the world. Mm-hmm. You get to hang out with Aristotle and Plato, and, you know.
Right.
But Jesus says no, because he's a badass. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, like in any case, this is where Satan has had enough. Mm-hmm. He says, quote, "Since neither wealth nor honor, arms nor arts, kingdom nor empire pleases thee, nor aught by me proposed in life contemplative or active, tended on by glory or fame, what dost thou in this world? The wilderness for thee is the fittest place. I found thee there, and thither I will return thee. Yet remember what I foretell thee. Soon thou shalt have cause to wish thou never hadst rejected, thus nicely or cautiously, my offered aid." And with that, he brings Jesus back to the desert, and he pretends to go away. And then...
but is he like, "All right, I'm going away now. I'm really going."
He just starts walking. He just like... Yeah. But no, this is so fucking petty. I love it. So he pretends to go away, and then Jesus tries to sleep, but, quote, "slept in vain, for at his head the tempter watched, and soon with ugly dreams disturbed his sleep." Mm-hmm. So he's just standing over Jesus, like, fucking reject me.
Every king bigger than the last.
And he's like, he's filling his head with bad dreams, right? Or yeah, maybe he's squatting like a toad again, right? He's just like whispering in Jesus' ear. He's like, "Ted Neely's going to play you in a rock opera." And Jesus is like, no, he's only 5'6". He's got a good voice, though. And then Satan's like,
he's got a good voice.
Yeah, no one's disputing that. But yeah, but in addition to the dreams, Satan also creates a storm. And it's thunder and lightning and wind and rain in the desert. And that's not all. He summons a host of howling, shrieking demons. Mm. Like, in a movie, this would be like the musical interlude where it's just like spectacle after spectacle, right? Like all these scary images. This would be Bald Mountain. But yeah, eventually morning comes and all the terrors of the night evaporate. But Satan returns, and Milton also describes him as being fed up and frustrated. Mm-hmm. He's not even trying to lie anymore. Mm-hmm. He comes out of the woods in his, quote, true shape, right? He's not the old man. He's not like the wealthy young man. Mm-hmm. He's just Satan. And he says, "Oh, good morning. I hope the storm didn't bother you too much. Mm-hmm. I heard it, but I was far away. Sounded like a doozy. And I know storms can sometimes be scary to humans, but beings like us understand that it's no more than the atmosphere sneezing." Mm-hmm. "They think storms bring signs and warnings, but we know better, don't we?" Mm-hmm. "Except maybe this one was a warning. Maybe bad things are coming. Maybe the prophecy is right. Maybe you'll succeed, but maybe it's going to get worse before it gets better. Maybe you should have accepted my offer."
Mm.
Yeah. But, like, he's saying all this as Jesus is walking, right? Jesus doesn't even stop to listen, right? So Satan has to, like, catch up as he's saying this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus says, "Worst thing that happened to me last night was I got a little rained on. No big deal." And this enrages Satan. And he says, "Then hear, O son of David, virgin born, for son of God to me is yet in doubt. Of the Messiah I have heard foretold by all the prophets of thy birth at length announced by Gabriel. With the first I knew, and of the angelic song in Bethlehem field, on thy birth night that sung thee Savior born. From that time seldom have I ceased to eye thy infancy, thy childhood, and thy youth, thy manhood last, though yet in private bread, till at the ford of Jordan, whither all flocked to the Baptist, I among the rest, though not to be baptized, by voice from heaven heard thee pronounced the Son of God, beloved. Thenceforth I thought thee worth my nearer view and narrower scrutiny. that I might learn in what degree or meaning thou art called the Son of God, which bears no single sense. The Son of God I also am, or was. And if I was, I am. Relation stands. All men are sons of God, yet thee I thought in some respect far higher, so declared. Therefore, I watched thy footsteps from that hour, all followed thee still on to this waste wild, where all my best conjectures I collect, thou art to be my fatal enemy. Good reason, then, if I beforehand seek to understand my adversary, who and what he is, his wisdom, power, intent, by parley or composition, truce or league, to win him or win from him what I can. And opportunity I here have had to try thee, sift thee, and confess have found thee proof against all temptation, as a rock of adamant, and as a center firm to the utmost of mere man both wise and good. Not more for honors, riches, kingdoms, glory have been before condemned, and may again, therefore, to know what more thou art than man, worth naming the Son of God by voice from heaven, another method I must now begin. This is my favorite part of the whole poem. Satan is so perplexed by Jesus, and it makes him so angry. He's like, what is your deal? From the moment you were born, I have watched you, and even now, I still don't understand. And the way he brings up Son of God is really sad, right? He's like, what does that even mean? I'm a son of God, or I was. No, I still am. We all are. Right? So what is it about you? And he ends this by taking Jesus to the roof of the temple for the third temptation. But I love how in Milton's version, Satan's already all out of temptations, right? He didn't plan this one. He is doing it because he wants answers. He's like, we're going to figure this out right now, Son of God. This is him out of control. He did not plan this. This is 100% reactionary. It's emotional. It's the most honest he has ever been. He wants to know how they are different. He knows who Jesus is, but he doesn't. And this is so great because Jesus is viewed by everyone else with suspicion, right? With doubt, with skepticism. Satan knows who he is more than they do. This is another one of my favorite tropes where the only one who truly understands the hero is the villain, right? This is Batman and the Joker. This is Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty. This is Clarice Starling and Hannibal Lecter, right? The tragic irony of these heroes is that their specialness also isolates them, right? They are alone. No one can truly understand them. The only one who comes close, the only one they could have a drink with or have a deep, meaningful discussion with is the villain. That's the vibe I get from Milton's Satan. Remember, Rogers says it's like a sibling rivalry, right? Satan knows who Jesus is, but he doesn't know why Jesus is. It doesn't make sense in his worldview, and it threatens his worldview. Up to this point, he thought he did everything right, or at least did the best he could, given his situation. And Jesus, just being Jesus, is showing him choices he could have made, paths he could have taken, and that, more than anything, drives him nuts. And he has to find some flaw, some tangible proof that they aren't the same, that Jesus isn't a better version of his story.
Well, I empathize with that idea of like, hey, I'm showing you all the choices you made that are wrong, and you know, you're whatever, 5,000 years old or what have you, and you're wrong, and you're wrong, and all these things that keep you up at night, that was correct, you know?
Yeah.
But then, yeah, if this Jesus has forgotten who he is,
I'm still not sure about
okay,
that.
Okay, all right. He doesn't remember. Well, I don't know. He doesn't bring it up, so I think he never brings it up. I mean, the Son and Satan have scenes together in Paradise Lost, so why don't they really make that relationship, right? So, well, let's say that Jesus is the Son from Paradise Lost.
Yeah. Well, I think that's established. I think the question is, I think the question that our good buddy Professor Rogers has created here is whether Jesus remembers his existence as the Son.
Exactly. I mean, that when you first said that, I didn't understand why that would be, but now I see it. Yeah, he doesn't bring up any of this stuff, any of their previous scenes together that you would expect. Yeah. Milton has forgotten a lot of Paradise Lost. Again, we're binging it the way that people binge our episodes of our show and remember things that we said and we don't remember them, right?
People binge episodes of our show?
But like, what if, you know, if Jesus did have the powers of the Father, right? Which is that right. as soon as he creates creation, he sees all the way into infinity, and he already exists outside of time, like Dr. Right. Manhattan, yeah. right? If Jesus is bringing up all of these choices that Satan made that led him to be where he is, and he has bringing up all these doubts in Satan, but Jesus doesn't have any of those doubts himself, despite being, you know, as old as him. Uh-huh. I see how that's sort of the shadow villain, you know, the villain and hero, catalyst and enzyme sort of idea.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And like, not even doing it on purpose, not even like mm-hmm. bringing up, it's like, hey, that time that you made that wrong choice. It's right. just like Satan sees in him, like a path that he could have tread.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's pissing him off that like, right. he's like, maybe this guy has the right idea.
you know, and then like the son, okay, let me think it from Satan's point of view. Like yeah. Satan was discontented in heaven.
Yeah.
And through that discontent tried to be the most powerful person in the world. And in doing so became the devil. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Jesus is trying to do all the opposites of those things. Right. Jesus mm-hmm. is trying to, Jesus is contented in heaven and then accepts that he has to leave it, you know, as opposed to right. Satan, who is expelled from it.
Right.
So Jesus accepts his fall from heaven. Right. Mm-hmm. And then is going to be destroyed as man. And then mm-hmm. from then is going to become the most important person in the right, history right. Of the story.
Yeah. So yeah, like, and, The way that Satan sees it is mm-hmm. if Jesus is right, mm-hmm. Satan is wrong.
Right.
And that's that, like, so he needs proof. He needs to, he's like, well, maybe we're not the same. Like, I'm going to take him to this temple and I'm going to make him jump and I'm going to prove that I didn't waste my freaking life. Well, not life, but like whatever right. angels have. Right.
yeah.
Yeah. Right. So that's where he is. Right. So he takes him up to the roof of the temple mm-hmm. and Milton doesn't say anything about the sky, but I imagine the storm is back and it's raging and their hair is whipping around and it's lightning and thunder and Satan is shouting over the storm. And he's like, you love quoting scripture. Mm-hmm. I can quote scripture too. If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. Show me once and for all. Make me understand. And it's not a temptation or a taunt. It's a plea. It's a cry to understand, right? But also to be understood. It's a cry of, why are you like this? Mm-hmm. With the subtext being, and why am I not like this?
Hmm.
And in that way, you could say that Jesus answers his question by saying, quote, also it is written, tempt not the Lord thy God. Though Satan might not recognize that as an answer, but it could be, if you look at all the other temptations being reflections of Satan's worldview, they are all about proving yourself, right? Proving that you are who you say you are.
Mm-hmm.
They're all things that Satan would totally do if he were in Jesus's position, right? Like if I were the Son of God, I would show everybody. I would have all the kingdoms. I do have all the kingdoms.
Right.
Look, Jesus, isn't that impressive? Aren't you impressed? Aren't you proud? Jesus? Right. And so Jesus's reply now makes sense as a direct response to, like, how are we different? Mm-hmm. Jesus is saying, I don't need to prove myself. And maybe we can read the subtext as, and you didn't need to either.
Mm-hmm.
And that revelation is just too much for Satan. He literally falls off the roof of the temple. Mm-hmm. Jesus doesn't push him or anything. He just falls, almost like he has become insubstantial. It's like the literal version of his heart or his spirit was sinking, and he falls back into hell.
That's really what we wanted from the last poem, right? From Paradise mm-hmm. Lost. Like that really makes it feel complete to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, going mm-hmm. back to the idea of Satan falling.
Yeah, right? So, yeah, they, like, it starts with a fall and it ends mm-hmm. with a fall, right? It's
yes.
perfect. Yeah.
That's the way it needs to go, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then angels do come. They rescue Jesus from the roof of the temple, and they put him down in a lush valley, and they lay a feast before him, and he's finally able to eat and drink after 40 days, and they're singing hymns of praise and glorifying him as the true Son of God. And if you wanted to read this, like where Jesus also wasn't 100% sure of who he was, mm-hmm. you can look at this as his confirmation, right? The angels are saying, you passed the test. We knew it was you. We believed in you, even when you doubted yourself.
Hmm.
And so the poem ends like this. Quote, thus the Son of God, our Savior meek, sung victor and from heavenly feast refreshed, brought on his way with joy. He, unobserved, home to his mother's house, private returned. And I like how when Milton first introduced Jesus, he said that he, quote, came as then obscure, unmarked, unknown. Mm-hmm. And we end with him returning home, quote, unobserved to his mother's house. Mm-hmm. Right? He's not riding in a chariot through Jerusalem or even on a donkey. He's walking home back to his mom. Right? I really like that. Again, it's the simpleness and the quietness of good against the flashiness of evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that, folks, is Paradise Regained. Kenan, what did you think of this thing? What do you think of this whole journey that we did?
Yeah, I think ending it with Paradise Lost would have been a mistake, and I'm glad that you did these four books of Paradise Regained. Yeah, that does make it feel like a complete story now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of where Satan ends up and ending with Satan, you know, having this climactic moment. Because, again, he disappears from the Adam and Eve story, unfortunately.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. For us, you know, as Exorcist fans here, before the little part you wrote about Jesus going home, we have a pretty long paragraph, I guess, for these books, not long for Paradise Lost, of you know, the Son of God and Jesus is going to be able to do all these things. The Son of God is going to be able to found a new paradise for Adam and his sons, the certain sons, it says, and also be able to fight the devil where he is. So, like, yeah, he'll chase the devil with the terror of his voice from his demonic holds, possession foul. You and your legions, yelling they shall fly and beg to hide them in a herd of swine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's our legion story from, well, you know, from Matthew and Luke, but also from The Exorcist.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So don't worry. So I don't want to spoil The Exorcist for anybody for the Exorcist minute. But
Or the story of Legion in the Bible.
Right, but here Milton says that Jesus will defeat the devil, will defeat Satan wherever he is.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the power of Christ will compel him. Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah, forget about it, right? It's one of the popes, right?
Right. That's right.
No, that's our buddy Dante poking in. Yeah, forget about it. Right? Yeah, but like I also like the idea, right? Compelling. Mm-hmm. I like that this Satan, Milton Satan, is kind of like compelled by this version of Jesus, right?
Right.
He's curious about him. He's attracted by Jesus's aura. Right. Mm-hmm. And he's becomes obsessed with him. He's like, what is it about this guy? And I like that's another trope. We keep on bringing up all these tropes, all my favorite ones, but like the idea that the villain recognizes the goodness of the hero and is kind of drawn to it, like probably because they don't have it themselves. And it's like, what does it feel like to have that goodness? You know?
Yeah, this Satan can't leave well enough alone. He would be fine. He would be the lord of the earth and the lord of the air. And be totally fine if he just could stay away from talking to this Jesus and try to tempt this Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, he's compelled.
Yeah. One other thing is I need to still read the novel, The Last Temptation of Christ, by Nikos Kazantzakis. But the movie version by Martin Scorsese, it does this whole thing we just read in about 5 minutes. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's on my list, folks. I gotta see that. Yeah.
But that one, there's like, I guess there's still three temptations, but there's four little visitors who tempt him. So.
Ah, okay.
Hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, folks, thanks for coming along with us on this journey through Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained. I really enjoyed it. It's not exactly how I remember it, but I'm glad to have revisited it.
Yeah. We in my house, we talk about, like I say to my boyfriend, I don't like camping, but I like having memories of having had camped, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we talk about like, well, is that something you would have wanted to have done? And we're like, yes, yeah. I would have wanted to have done that. Let's do it.
Yeah. I've been to Mount Rushmore. Sure. I have a picture. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Does it look exactly like all of the other pictures in the gift shops? No, actually, those look better.
You're right.
But I took that picture.
Right.
Yeah.
So we read Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained. Good for us.
Yeah, we did. And Dante's Inferno. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did all of that stuff, right? And now, Kenan, like, you know, I'm not in a university. I'm in a private school.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not, you know, there's not a chance that I'm going to be walking by a teacher's classroom and they're going to be teaching some high school kid, Dante's Inferno. I mean, maybe I'll get lucky. But, you know, you could be walking the halls of UNLV and you might hear somebody being like, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh man, I wouldn't be able to, now that we've done this show, I wouldn't be able to resist, you know, just poking my head in and being like, hey, you should listen to our podcast. We know all about that. I'm actually glad I don't work at a university, because I would immediately run to the head of the English department and be like, hey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any classes that are currently going over Dante or Milton? Because we got all of that covered.
Yeah, but the head of the English department's like Billy Friedkin. He says, Lester, I need another podcast. Like, I need a flying fuck through a rolling donut. All right, great.
We love you, Billy. Professor Billy. Well, folks, that is all of my notes. Keenan, is there anything else?
Nope, I think we got it.
Folks, this has been another excellent Exorcist Minute. I've been Lesser Ryan Clark. Oh, no, wait. I do have to announce, like, we're going to take a break from...
No, you don't.
No?
I
devil
think
stuff?
So.
All
right, if you want to.
Yeah, let me just, yeah.
Okay.
And folks, the history of the devil is going to continue, but for right now, mm-hmm. we're gonna stop here on Paradise Regained. We're gonna take a little break as we finish up The Exorcist, and mm-hmm. once that's done, we'll kick it back into gear as a separate podcast, and it will be I'm not sure what we're gonna call it, but maybe just The History of the Devil, mm-hmm. or you know, something more clever than that. But it'll be its own separate feed. It'll be another podcast separate from The Exorcist Minute. And you'll be able to find all the episodes there, you know, the Testament of Solomon and Dante and all the Milton stuff. And we're going to continue. I have ideas about screw tape letters, Letters from the Earth by Mark Twain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, The Last Temptation of Christ. And my favorite devil, who is the robot devil from Futurama.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we're going to be talking about all of that. And it's going to be its own podcast, and I'm mm-hmm. excited for that. But for now, we're going to be focusing on The Exorcist. Yeah. So that is all of my notes. Keenan, is there anything else?
No, I think we got it.
All right, folks, this has been another excellent Exorcist Minute. I have been Lester Ryan Clark. You can reach me on all the socials as Lester Ryan Clark.
And I've been Keenan Diaz, and you can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Howdy Keenan.
Yeah, we got our listener group, Compelling Conversations. Go check that out and request to join, and we'll let you in here with us. Thank you so much to everyone who has shared the show by word of mouth or on social media, and a big thank you to everyone who has given us a 5-star ratings on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to our show. It really does help us more than you could know. We really appreciate it. That's going to help our little podcast grow and find more cool people like you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Keenan, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I think I am, Lester.
Folks, until next time,
the power of El Monterrey microwavable chimichangas compels you. So they're really good chimichangas, huh?
Yeah. Have you ever had these things?
I don't think I've had a chimichanga of any kind.
God. Oh my god! They are. Imagine a burrito,
mm-hmm.
and then fry it.
Oh, that's what a chimichanga is.
Yeah. It is. It is delicious. It is paradise. It is paradiso.
All right, tell me more about this La Victoria salsa medium.
Oh my god, it's just, I mean, it's, you know what, like, everyone's talking about the pace is like, you know, it's like, you know, thick and chunky and blah blah blah, who cares. La Victoria might be made in New York City. I don't care.
New York City.
I don't give a flying fuck through a rolling donut. All I know is that it's better. And yeah, you just smother those chimichangas with that, and right. you do it as immediately after they come out of the microwave, so that when mm-hmm. you put the cold salsa on these like boiling hot chimichangas, it makes a little snap crackle. It's like,
oh my gosh. Yeah. All right. So Lester would have taken away the sins of the world. He would have been the Lamb of God,
yeah.
except
no.
El Monterrey microwavable chimichangas with La Victoria yeah. mediums also.
I am not putting myself on that level. I am not. No. I'm just a guy with powers in this situation that can either use them for good, or mm-hmm. and this is it's like a one or the other. I can't do both, right?
Uh-huh.
Have all the microwavable chimichangas I can eat. And folks, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I love y'all, but
fucking El Monterey. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, yeah. I used to lay four of them out on a plate.
You don't have to tell us this, Lester.
And microwave them.
Lester, you
microwave, like the bag says 2 minutes for one, right? Mm-hmm. But I would do, like, for one, I would do 3 minutes because that makes them makes them nice and crispy on the outside, right? But then what do you do for four, right? Mm-hmm. You can't do 12. You have to do it like a little bit more. It's like 13, 14, something like that. Just get them, you know, like,
yeah, but
so they're not squishy on the inside, right?
The bag probably says one serving is half a chimichanga.
No, it says one serving per chimichanga. Yeah. No, never listen to the bag, actually. Hang on. El Monterey chimichangas. I'm going to get the nutrition facts here.
All right.
Let's see. Yeah, okay. So, No. The beef and bean, yeah. Give me that thing. No, get away. Oh. I landed on a thing. It says buy now, 8-pack. No. Get behind me, Satan. I was just seeking knowledge. I was just looking for nutrition facts. Okay, here we go. I found it. Okay, serving size, one chimichanga, right? Servings per container, 8. Calories, 290. That's for one
chimichanga.
In a chimichanga, right? Total fat is 23%. Mm-hmm. Total carbs is 10%. Protein is 8%. Or no, 15%, sorry. 4% vitamin A, 2% vitamin C, 2% calcium.
You don't have to justify 10% this. 10% iron. Lester, right? We support you with your chimichanga.
Total fat is less than lifestyle. 65 grams. Less than. See that? Yeah. So wait. So calories.
You don't have to prove anything to us.
So let's just round that up. That's 300. So 300 times 4. That's 1,200.
Come back to us.
And if Lester, it's 23%, then I'm getting 100% of my fat by those four chimichangas, which would be a meal.